Joining me today on the Neil Wilkins podcast on this episode is Beata Shalette, who is a growth architect and a growth architect who has created the word. Now, correct me, Beata, if I've got this wrong, but niche-sizing, which was a word.
Niche-sizing,
which is a whole new word for me because I've not come across this before. And I want to start there. What is niche-sizing?
So niche-sizing is the assumption that you get rich in the niche and that everybody, every internet marketer out there is terrorizing you to find your niche. And then you look at your extensive experience in life and the wonderful transformational journey you can provide for your clients. And then some schmuck from somewhere comes and says, "What's the niche?" And then you wreck your brain and you feel terrible and you are trying to slice and dice all this brilliance of yourself into this one thing that you can get rich in and you fail miserably. So I came up with this term niche-sizing as basically terror that is imposed on you by other people. And I reframe that and say, well, shouldn't you be able to take your entire experience, put it under one umbrella? And then make that one umbrella the niche.
Interesting. Isn't that interesting? That's a whole different way. Well, it's a real challenge, I guess, of the way, as you say, many industries actually work. I mean, that is a whole new kind of real prioritization and focus for many businesses who try and be something to everyone. This is real kind of back to basics of marketing, isn't it?
Well, it's back to the basics of marketing. I mean, I look at this always from the perspective, Neil, of what's happening in real life. So let's say you meet another fabulous person and you want to be with this person for the rest of your life. And then you say, well, this person likes a physically fit person. So are you going to niche this relationship to you being a physically fit person? And that's all this person is going to get from you? That would be preposterous. I mean, that would be too, I mean, they may be attracted to that in the first place. But then the more they get to know you, they realize, oh my gosh, Neil is really smart. Neil is really good looking. Neil has a great family. Neil knows what he's doing. Neil is great fun to be around. Neil is an amazing cook. Neil is probably going to be an amazing parent and, you know, a great travel partner. So wouldn't you, this person, to go and say, Neil is the niche. That's my focus, is this one person. But we don't have to decide on how much Neil can bring to this, because Neil brings all of this to the table. And so when I look at what really happens in the real world, and then what other people are telling you, I just looked at it and I was like, I cannot confirm this concept, because with my experience, and I have decades of experience, so nobody's going to say, well, what is it? What's the one thing that you really do? I'm like, I can tell you what I do. I help people to turn their talent into a business. And then once they have that, then I help them to grow it. And once they've done that, I help them to scale it. That's my niche, is the growth architect. So what we did is we took growth architecture, and that's the niche. Not one piece of what I do, but the architecture is the niche.
And then there's a real clarity, isn't there? Because it filters out all of the noise. It filters out what you're not, but actually gives a real clarity of purpose, both for you, but also then for the potential client. Because then exactly, we know what you're not, but we also definitely know what you are. There's something really quite profound in that. It's so simple, and yet it is really quite profound. Why do people not do this more?
Because I have this theory, you know, and we're talking about digital marketing and specifically about a lot of the noise that's happening in the internet marketing world. We have to remember that internet marketing is based on the concept of scarcity and FOMO. When you go out, instead of having the plan, you go, I'm looking for something that is based on my level of understanding of what the problem is. Now, if you knew what your problem was, you'd already solved it. So you go with your limited understanding of your problem, and you go out in the market and you find the most persuasive internet marketer. So let's say you come across a Pete Vargas. And Pete Vargas says, you know, your problem, Neil, is that you don't know how to speak. Because if you knew how to speak from stage, you would be attracting all these audiences. So now you go and you take that course and go, you know, actually, he was absolutely right. I feel better. I, you know, I can now go to all these places. Now, Pete Vargas's affiliate marketer comes in and he says, well, how are you going to get people into a funnel when you speak? Oh, Russell Brunson, he's absolutely right. I need a click funnel. So now you need to learn how to do the click funnel. Once you've done the click funnel, the next guy comes in and let's say it's Marissa Murgatroy. And she says, do you have an online course that you can sell these people once they're in your funnel? You go, makes perfect sense. Now you start learning your online your online course. Now Ryan Dice comes and says, well, but how are you going to create the leads that come into the funnel? And now you're starting to go like, okay, this is getting a little complicated here. And next thing you know, you've invested, what, $150,000 in 10 different things. You still don't have a plan because they all tell you one more thing. But this thing, my thing, is the domino that now makes it all magically fall into place. That's why people feel so confused and why nothing is working. Because in growth architecture, we love Pete Vargas. We think Russell Brunson is one of the smartest people alive right now for having figured all of this out. But what we say, or what I say, is like, can you just all stop the nonsense and the hype? The idea is that we need to look at what the person is, what the person knows how to do, what their unique value proposition is. We call it the unapologetic value proposition. What makes you different than anybody else? We make that the thing. And then we look at everything else and see what fits into this business model. And it may be speaking if you don't have small children at home and a partner who actually occasionally wants to see you. That's a great model. Otherwise, podcasting might be better, which is why I guess you and I are doing this, because we like the connection and the messaging, but we don't want to be on the road anymore like we used to be. And once you reverse engineer it and you say, here's where I am, here's where I want to go. Now, then with that, I can reverse engineer any strategy. I can architect it. And then we decide, okay, here's where your online course comes in. Here's where your speaking comes in. Here's where your podcast comes in. And now suddenly everything makes sense. You know, my friend Krista Grasso calls it reducing unnecessary complexity. I believe that my skill set really, Neil, more than anything, is to help people figure out what the pieces are, help them assemble the puzzle pieces, and then make it really not very complicated. Because once you know what you're doing, it's easy.
I love that phrase, and I've loved this phrase for a long, long time, reverse engineering. There's something really precise. There's something really kind of sweet and really focused around that phrase. And the reason I love it so much is because, you know, it plays out in manufacturing, it plays out in systems, it plays out in IT and infrastructure and all those kind of big kind of very process-led industries, but it also plays out in communications and in business and building a business, doesn't it? Is basing yourself as a growth architect, is it all about the reverse engineering of things? Because it must be very hard for you in the role that you have to be able to be a growth architect if you can't see the desired destination to work back from. Because if you start from where you are now, I mean, you could end up anywhere.
Exactly. And so it's interesting that you say that, because that is we literally just identified that as about a month ago as an issue. And we said, all right, so what are the things that we need to give people to even have some sort of a destination? I created a quiz. This is like totally behind the scenes look. I created a quiz called What's Your Talent Worth? And it's at whatsyourtalentworth.com. Because when I ask people, and I bet, Neil, you have the same thing in your work. When you say, what do you want, is this awkward silence. Confusion ensues. What do you mean? Well, that's a very simple question. Where do you want to go? Internet marketers don't ask you that, because they sell you their stuff before they want to know where you want to go. They also make it about simple things like the toys, the cars, the whatever. So I believe that when you think about what do I want, let's start with a realistic assessment of what your talent is worth. So we created a quiz and we developed these factors. So you can literally go to this website. You can enter, you know, how much experience you have, the desirability of your skills. So it's an actual mathematical formula. It's not my numbers. It's your numbers. You enter your numbers and it'll spit out a number. And so that number probably is a number much higher than what you're earning right now. But that's what's called your earning potential. Now, with your earning potential, that already gives me a starting point. So I self-helped myself, basically, in the lead generation to say, if somebody comes in and says their skill and expertise is worth $1.5 million per year, just based on one person, their earning potential, were we to do exactly what he just told me, he wants to work this many hours, take that many vacations, this is his expertise, this is his skill level, and it spits out a $1.5 million number, and you're making $150,000. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What's that disconnect all about? Well, it is because you are here, and you just said you could be here. Now we can already reverse engineer. That's how we just solved that, Neil.
So without giving away kind of the commercial secrets of, Beate's kind of life and work, which I think we're starting to do here, but I don't want to go too deep. Tell me to stop if we're going too deep in this one. But that kind of the disconnect, so you use the word disconnect there. I want to pick up on that word because that for me is really interesting. That for many people, I guess, is the big barrier, isn't it? Is either not seeing it, not identifying it, or knowing it's there, but almost being fearful to go there. Is that the role of the growth architect to identify and almost embrace the disconnect? Because that's where you add your value, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, we want to challenge people. I mean, if you have a number and it says 1.5 million is your earning potential, and you don't believe your own number, but it is your own number, well, that tells me that there are some mindset and some confidence issues. If you see that number and you're not making that number, but you believe that number, then I know that you have a business model and process and system issues. So, yes, the objective is, and I look at this really pragmatically. It's interesting that you asked the question the way you asked it. So the answer to that really is, I don't have time for bullshit. It's like if you wanna, I don't want people to want to hang around me for 20 years. I don't even know if I have 20 years left, but I have the shortcuts. I don't even have the great ideas anymore. That's not my role. I used to have the ideas. I already sold my business for millions to Bill Gates, but I have the shortcuts. So if you want the fluff and the whole thing that goes so often with internet marketing and the digital marketing world, which is poisonous at times, then you kind of can go do that. But I also see that there's a huge shift in the market, Neil, and I would love to see what you think about this, that people are kind of tired of this rah-rah. And they go, just give me the information and then show me how to do it and be there with me when I do it so that we can implement it, because I don't need another 10,000 hours of learnings that I'll never watch because I don't have 10,000 hours to watch.
I would certainly reflect on that too. And I think, you know, I completely agree is that, you know, time is of the essence. I've been having a few conversations recently where, you know, you can leverage everything else that you want, but actually the one thing that is non-negotiable is the concept of time. So it is just the most important thing. So talk to me about time and I'm listening. And I think a lot of people understand that, you know, time is very, very precious, most precious asset that they have. And if in this kind of re-engineering, reverse engineering, whatever you want to call it, to kind of bridge that disconnect, if time can be the thing or that commodity that we're working with, everything else, all the rah-rah, all that hype is just nonsensical, but it's also irrelevant. I mean, why do we even trade in that? It just seemed like a thing that became a thing without anyone really thinking about it. Whereas all the time, the thing under the surface, under the hood, if you like, was time. That was the thing that was always the real kind of asset that we need to play with. That's kind of how I've been seeing it over the years. And I just feel it's now with the kind of the pace of how, you know, time is traveling on. This last year has just been crazy fast. And, you know, with the advent of AI, with all the automation that's coming, everything is predicted to get even faster. It's like, yeah, but hold on, what about my time, the value of my time? And I think as customers, as, you know, clients, as people, you know, sort of buying into other people's products and services, it has to be relayed back to me as a customer or as a client in time saving or time optimization, possibly. That feels to me that's where the real value comes. What do you think about that? Does that resonate for you?
I think it's absolutely spot on. I was listening to a Grant Cardone thing, and just to see how he does it. And then at the end of it, he literally gave everything away that he's ever done for a ridiculously low amount of money. And I thought, this is so old school, but it works for him, where he literally gives you every course he's ever created. And it was like for $600 or $700, right? And then I looked at the comments of the hopefuls. I do think that there is and forgive me if I'm honest here, a lower level expectation that more is better. But on the higher level, beginning, mid, and up, there is no more is better. There is less is better. Deeper is better. And so I think it's a ultimate decision you have to make as a marketer is, where do you want to see yourself? You know, I have clients that are in the digital marketing business, and I've designed a couple of these, of their signature systems, so that they can differentiate themselves on what their method is. Because in the digital marketing space, and I say this, a lot of you guys sound exactly the same. There's no, I don't know why I would go with you. I mean, you sound like 5,000 other guys that, you know, send me the exact same verbiage. So I have no idea what I'm getting, other than a bunch of ads and you know, some cheap guys that, I mean, what does it do for me and my brand? So I think that the objective here really is to say, who are you in this? Are you deep? Are you excellent? Are you focused? Are you broad? Are you cheap? And there's nothing wrong with either one of those positionings, but it has to be a choice. It could also be, you know, in a transformation journey to say, in our phase number one, in our digital marketing incubator, we'll take you from whatever, $10,000 a month in sales to $50,000 a month in sales, so that we then can really ramp up the ad spend. And in our phase two program, we'll take you now from $50,000 to $250,000. And then you go in our high level, high touch, white glove program. And then that's where we're going to take to $1 million a month. So, but that's not a niche, right? So then you have to put an umbrella over it. And then you have to say, our signature system is the three-phase digital marketing incubator for product-based businesses, for example. Well, there's your niche. Then it's a transformation journey to put these people on that, not the one thing that you do. And I think when you just have to start to sit down and clarify this in your head, who you are. We have done in the last year, just to kind of give a couple of examples. We've really started to say no to who are we not? Can I do leadership development? Yes. Do I want to do leadership development? No. Will I do leadership development if I am working in a program specifically to help them to get to a point where they can lead a team? Yes. Do I offer it outside of that? No. Can I teach people how to speak? Yes. Do I want to teach people how to speak? No. Can I teach people how to do this? Do I want to do this? No. What do I want to do? Is I want to growth architect shortcuts to help people build the business, then grow it, and then ultimately scale it. And I have a process in growth architecture. It's called the 5-Star Success Blueprint, where I can diagnose where you are at. And then I'll tell you exactly, you are at the level now where you need to focus on growth, or you are at a level now where you need to scale. And then we have a completely different and honest conversation. Now our sales conversations are not so hypey. Then our sales conversations are focused. It's like, here's where you are at. What do you want to do?
And for me then, by approaching it that way, what clear message I'm getting through here is that at different points in the journey of the business or in the journey of the individual, there are certain decision points that can be appropriate. So it doesn't mean necessarily you follow one single system and it's going to fix everyone's problems. There are certain little nuances that happen at certain, I guess, ages of the life cycle of the business, where, as you said right at the start here, you help a business to form, you help it to transition, you help it to then grow or scale, and then you potentially end it, help it to end or exit. So there's kind of these various kind of sort of decision points, I'm kind of sort of thinking here, and to move them to the next one, there's fundamental decisions. Do I want this thing to, you know, be mass market? Do I want to go for the numbers because I can make money from numbers? Or do I want this to be a smaller scale in terms of the number of clients or the number of, you know, offerings I have, but they're bigger tickets, so they're higher value, or white glove as you describe them? Are the decisions that people make here, are they that clear cut and that simple? Because it doesn't sound complicated when you actually break it down like this.
Well, that, again, you know, that's why we design growth architecture, because I have an issue with people going around and acting like this is rocket surgery, rocket science, or brain surgery. It really isn't. It goes by a particular parameter, and the way I describe it, and that's why we call it growth architecture, is when we architect a house, there's certain things you have to make a decision on. Where are we building the house? Is it a remodel? Is it a new construction? How many people need to live there? What is your style? What do you like? Do you like a modern, a traditional? Where would you like to see the sunset? From the kitchen when you're cooking? From the family room? Which way are we facing the house? And then we decide, well, we need to build the foundation, because without a foundation, we can't build a house. That's the basics. It's not sexy. It's dirty, and excavation is involved. And it's certainly much nicer laying in your cooler bathtub over, you know, with a great view when it's finished. But you're going to have to build the foundation first, and you have to put the plumbing in and the electric. And you have to, like in construction, and everybody will tell you this, construction goes by a very specific pattern of what you need to build next. Like, sure, you can buy your bathtub. But if you don't have a first floor to put it in, what are you going to do with it? Nothing. So you need to build the house first. Everything has to be tiled, and, you know, and not tiled, but, you know, the bathtub goes in before it gets tiled. So every decision follows another decision. And why don't you just follow that? Why are you trying to reinvent that? Say, no, I know better. You know, I know exactly what bathtub you want. You don't even know what the house is going to look like. What do you need with a bathtub?
Does this kind of take out of the equation intuition and kind of gut feel? Are you kind of advocating that it's very, very much about process, and that actually what we should be doing is working from our head, not our heart? Because it feels that being process and very kind of systematic about it, which I get, totally understand, reverse engineering is a beautiful thing, gives you control, shows you the direction of the journey. But there is something that almost by definition eliminates the feeling element of it. Can they run hand in hand?
Oh my God, I love this question. Nobody has ever picked up on that. So I run on a lot of intuition, which people think is counterintuitive, but it's not. Because remember, once you've done the basics, how are you going to decorate the house? Are we going to go blue, green, yellow, red? What bathtub are we picking? Is it for two people? Is it for four people? Is it just a shower with a steam? Because then we talk about what do you like and what suits you. I heard once a really great example by spiritual teacher Marian Williamson. And she compared it to, she says, well, when you're a parent, you build a backyard. And in the backyard, you put the swing and the sandbox and the plants, whatever you put in there. And then you tell your children to go out and play. You don't tell them that they have to play with a ball. You don't tell them they have to sit on the swing. You don't tell them that they have to use the green shovel and the blue bucket and take five scoops of sand to put in the bucket. You just tell them to go out and play. But you have built the backyard. And so that's how I want you to think about this, is that this is where a lot of people get caught up, and you're absolutely correct, especially the creative guys. They go and they look at this and they go, oh my God, growth architects, the whole system and processes, my God, so boring, you know, it's just like horrible, it's like dreadful. Why are you forcing me? Why are you forcing me to do this? I'm like, well, because you don't know what to do unless you have a structure. Structure gives freedom. But within that structure, you can do whatever you want. Like, do I care if your walls are blue or green? I really don't. Do I care if you sell to the 20-year-olds or the 50-year-olds? I don't care, but I will build you a structure. I will help you figure out and design and build a structure that you can serve who you want to serve within that structure. But that's where the intuition comes in. That is when you are now connecting to your passion and your impact statement, the vision, the mission. Like, what am I here for? You know, maybe it's a party house. Fine by me. Maybe you need 20 people that live there with you. Fine by me. Maybe an introvert, it's just you and your partner. Fine by me. But that decision drives what we are building. So they do, to answer your question, absolutely go hand in hand. Without that intuition or that feeling of like, you know what? I have this thing. I really think that so-and-so would really resonate with this message. Great. Let's do it. I just spoke today. Let's just bring this in. Let's land this plane. So I just spoke today to a gentleman who works in ministry. And he said, I got a full-time job, but he has a podcast. So I asked him, what's the purpose of the podcast? It's always my first question. What's the purpose of everything? He says, to bring hope. I said, and what is your full-time business? And he says, well, this is where I help ministries to do this. And I said, are these two things connected? He says, well, I struggle with that. And then I think about this and my intuition kicks in. And I said, this is very simple to me. Because the proof of concept that you want to bring to these other churches, you know, the updated business model on how to reach more people, you're proven with your podcast. So if we take the podcast as the case study to say to them, if you were to use this model that I'll help you design, you can reach these many people with a vehicle like a podcast, like I do. So now it's become the proof of concept. So you see now how we just put the umbrella again over the whole thing instead of having these disjointed and disconnected things. That's all intuition. But, you know, when I talked to someone, I saw it. I said, look, that took us 20 minutes to do. How hard is it? He said, I can't believe how you do it. I said, that's the intuition. I do believe that I'm here. I'm very, very purpose-driven, and I only want to work with purpose-driven people, because what else is worth doing? That lights me up, because that's how I make my impact.
And that's really clear. And it's just, well, it's crystal clear. Are there points when you're being the architect, so you're doing this work, where there are possibly unsurmountable, is that the right word? But there are gaps where you just cannot see it or feel it. So there's this target, you've reverse engineered backwards, back to the current situation, But as you go on that journey yourself, either intuitively or process or system-wise, you can't make the connection. Do you have or do you envisage a time or a situation where that might be the case? Because that would be very interesting, clear space, wouldn't it? Where something either would need to happen that is different to every other house, let's call it virtual house that you've built here, that you've never encountered before. How would that be? How would that feel? There must be times when you do see gaps.
I think that the gaps that I see is when I work with somebody who doesn't want to make a decision. So I can only pick up on or architect what's in your head. But if in your head are 16 conflicting scenarios and you don't want to decide on any one of them, that is when typically it's hard to land a plane. Because there comes a point where you have to pick a horse and ride it. Otherwise, you're not going to be in the race. Like, you can be at the stable and we can talk about all the qualities of the horses all day long. But there's a point when you want to go in a race, you're going to have to pick one and ride it. And sometimes people are terrified of their own decisions. And that's the only times I've really encountered where that happens, which makes me only want to make my processes better to help people that have a hard time making decisions to say, okay, we can put all of these pieces in the parking lot. I can add whatever you want to the system at some point. But what's the first race? That sometimes is challenging. And it's a very particular personality type. Typically an ENFP has the hardest time to make the first decision because they have a lot of emotions and they are so community driven that they want everybody to be taken care of, that they just keep coming up with ideas that would be more encompassing and helping more people. And another angle of it that would make other people happy, another angle that would make even more people happy. And then at the end, we decide nothing. You have to pick the horse. You have to ride it.
That's a really interesting one. I love the seamless integration of Myers-Briggs there in terms of preferences. That was neat. Just on that theme then, if somebody comes to you and you're doing some work with them, and in the process of the conversation, you know, you've figured out maybe 20-30% of the journey, 20-30% of the work that you need to do in your work. And then suddenly you realize that they are very set on a particular idea. There's a pet project or passion, or there's an element of the business that they have, which they are not going to let go of. But you know it's not serving them. And the ego from their side of things cuts in, and they are just holding on to this thing with their very life, as though their life depends on it. How do you then, because I know a lot of people listening to this will know that somebody in their management team or their line manager or whoever it is doing this to them. And it can be a real inhibitor of growth and of progress, and particularly in these really sensitive times where everything matters. How do you deal with somebody like that who, you know, they're hearing what you're saying, but they are not going to shift? How do you kind of overcome that? Because you can see that there's a better way. You can suggest all of this great stuff, but they are just holding on to that pet project, that product, or that way of doing things, and they're not going to release their grip on it. How do you deal with that?
If it's the fear of change. And I have begun to actually put in my materials a graphic that illustrates the psychology of change. And for anybody who's ever looked in the psychology of change, you know there's something called the Valley of Despair. And the Valley of Despair is after, you know, you make the commitment and everybody's, yay, this is amazing. And you start doing the work, stuff goes wrong. More stuff goes wrong. The results are not there. The campaign fails. The client hates you. On and on and on and on it goes. And you go to the Valley of Despair. Now you go, I have two options. I'm going to fight my way through it. I'm going to give up. I think the education that we are required to give as consultants to our clients needs to come early in the game. If I can prepare my clients and say, what's going to happen is you're going to hit resistance. You're going to have people that are going to hit resistance. And here's the psychology of the resistance. Because we understand that in mindset or in higher awareness and consciousness, that the attachment to something is, you know, also often talked about as the ego that needs confirmation that what they've done before is meaningful because there's a story attached to it that gives your life meaning. And if that meaning is changing, then that story changes and the way the justification of your life or the justification of a story suddenly goes away. And that's threatening for most people because that's why so many people can't forgive trauma because they've identified with a trauma their entire life. Now, if they were to let that story go and say what Tony Robbins says, I thank my mother for everything, for all the abuse. Because if I don't do that, I cannot take full credit for what I've created because it is because of that. And despite of that, but there's no value on whether it's because or despite, because the fact is, it is. And I think that we as leaders, when we are going into change management, we'll be trying to lead teams. We need to acknowledge that. I have a friend by the name of Michael Margulies who wrote a book called 10X. And he has a concept that is so freaking simple. He says, if the message you go out with has friction in itself, it cannot work. The message you go out with to your team or to your clients or to your colleagues has to be a message that everybody can buy into. Otherwise, you already start with friction. If I say black, white says, what about me? If I say white, black says, what about me? And then gray goes, yo, baby. What about, you know, nobody even ever talks about gray. It's always black and white. What's wrong with you people? And you have to remember that. That's human psychology to do that. So the smarter you get, the better you have to get at going out at this and saying like, hey, this is where we want to go with this. This is the emotional outcome we want to generate for our clients. We have friction. Because the results show that there's friction. The results are not convincing. So now I want to hear on where are our own biases and the conscious questioning of, is what we believe true? What if it isn't? What if it's not true? And then can I, in my leadership team or my management team, have these conversations with people where they then examine and say, what is really true about this? I'm going to give you a very, very personal example, Neil. And I hope it's okay to do that completely off the record. So I get a call from my mother who tells me that when I was a baby, that the doctor didn't like fat babies and therefore she didn't feed me, but that I was whimpering at night and then eventually she goes like, well, maybe I should feed her. So when I got this call, my first thought, Neil, was probably like anybody who hears this, like WTF. And so I looked at this then and I said, okay, so wait. What's my initial reaction? You know, I've been abused. It fits into my abuse idea. Bad mother, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, the abuse happened much earlier than I thought. No wonder X, Y, and Z happen in my life. And then I go, but is it true? Or is the story like she wants to tell that she's a really great mother, that she stood up to this overbearing God in white, which whatever it was some 60 years ago, right? And she fought for her children despite what she was told by the doctor. is that the story? That she's really a great mother. So the choice on how I interpret the story is entirely mine. And now I'm really confused. Because as I thought about it, Neil, I had four different scenarios on how I could look at this. Well, which one is the right one? And I think that's what we tend to do as people, is that we hear something very specifically and we want it to fit what we already believe in so badly that everything we hear is justification that the world is like this, clients are like this, I'm not getting paid enough, I'm not getting my value, people are evil, people are mean. But what if the story is not true?
So the story we're telling in our heads then needs to be very evidence-based. I guess the way that you're being the growth architect is very evidence-driven, because if it isn't, then it's going to be very hard, because you're going to be telling stories to others that could almost be perceived as quite random. And it's kind of like, okay, I want to get to here from here. Why would I believe you? Why would I trust you? This just doesn't feel, it's just your idea. Whereas actually, I guess if you evidence base it, so you're giving them the data, the proof, the case studies of others who have been before them, all of these things can help to kind of, I guess, solidify that story. Give them the tangible evidence that, hey, whatever you believe, if Beate tells you that this is it, because it's based on this evidence, you can trust it, you can rely on it. Do you find yourself kind of using anecdotal evidence or real tangible evidence a lot of the time? Because otherwise you're in a really awkward position, aren't you, of making recommendations, making suggestions, almost based on hearsay, or it could be challenged that it's based on hearsay. Well, is evidence a big thing for you?
Sometimes I just ask him, how is this working for you? It's working. Well, what are the sales? Well, the sales are not there. Well, how do you know you hit the right audience? Well, I just know. What's the result? Okay, so you don't have a result. So how do you know it's the right audience? Well, I just know it's the right audience. I spoke to a woman and she said she had done a financial fitness education. And I said, well, when are you going to launch it? She says, I'm going to launch it next week. I said, how are you going to launch it? Oh, I'm just going to launch it on social media. I said, how are you going to launch it on social media? Well, I'm just going to post about it. Okay. Now, you and I in digital market world, we already know that that's a nowhere proposition. I said, well, how much is it? She says, $5,000. I'm going, like, financial education for people that don't want financial education, that want to make more money or need more money, that don't know that their lack of ability of handling finances at $5,000. So I already know where this is going. Nowhere. And I said, well, how many of these do you want to sell? She says, oh, I want to sell at least 1 million. I said, okay, well, let's calculate it then. At 1 million in sales, at the current conversion rates and the ad spend cost, you're looking at about $100 million in ad spend. And that's probably generous to get to this number. What are you going to do? Well, I'm just going to launch it next week anyway on social media. Okay, your choice. I mean, at that point, you really can't help them. Because if you pointed out and said, look, in digital market, there's very clear data. The conversion rates keep dropping. And the algorithms keep being better and better for Facebook, not for us. Better and better for Google, not for us. Better and better for LinkedIn, not for us. So there is an actual calculation. So yes, I think two things go into that to answer your question. Evidence, facts, case studies, and then also intuition and truth. I mean, that's my job. I'm a consultant. It's like, look, if things would be working, you wouldn't be talking to me. So you're obviously talking to me for a reason. I mean, if you want to give me money so I confirm what you already believe, which is clearly not working, please keep your money. You come to me because you understand that something is off, and I can help you with that because that is what I do, and I do that really well. But let's not pretend it's working because we know it's not.
There's a single word that, as you were describing that, just popped into my head. Use the word truth. I'm feeling the word honesty. It's kind of, there's an honesty that kind of comes through from you in your process of being the growth architect. But there's also almost an inherent need for the client also to be honest. Don't try and cover this up. Don't try and fudge the results. Don't tell me what it isn't just because you want it to be something. Be honest. Be honest with yourself. There's this almost intrinsic need here in this stage of, you know, if you want to properly grow, if you want to properly sustain your business, you have to be honest to everyone around you, to your consultant, but also to yourself. Is that what I'm picking up here? Because there is, yes. It feels like that's the overarching thing here.
It always is, you know, but the process that I designed is not a process where I sit there with a hammer and just, you know, put little nails in people's hands and make sure that they hurt. That's not the process. The process here is like, what do you want? Tell me what you have. And then tell me, you know, when you really look at this and you look at the numbers, what are you experiencing? And then what do you want to do about it? Where would you really like to be? What would you like to do with this business? How many people do you want to impact? Because based on that, we built it. I'm not here to, I can create something out of nothing. Well, that's not true. I can actually create quite a bit of stuff out of nothing. But we need to make sure that people, you said the magic word, there has to be an honesty and there has to be a desire. There has to be real desire to wanting to make an impact. Because if you don't go out there and you say, this is what I make a decision. I make a decision to make this happen and I'll do what it takes to get there. It's like when people say, I want to find the partner, they have to go out and date. Or at least they have to go and set up some online profiles and then they go out and date. Like you cannot find somebody sitting at home watching TV eating chocolate-covered pretzels. You have to leave the house. There's a particular process that is involved. But how that is or who can help you with that, that's entirely up to you. I think that's a resonance thing. You're absolutely right. I'm definitely a no BS person. I'm very honest. I don't have time. My daughter just had a baby. I'm officially a grandparent. And that gives me an unbelievable amount of joy. You know, to have a conversation with a 4-month-old. So I want to honor my time, but I also want to honor your time. You want to go there fast. So allow me to help you to get there fast. And then I go play with Kayliana and you go and spend some time with your family. How's that?
That's the honesty coming through in leaps and bounds, isn't it? Because once you meet and engage with somebody at that level and that kind of, yeah, sort of honest, I guess, transactional level where it's like, yeah, I'll be honest with you, you be honest with me, you know, great things can happen because then you can do your job, can't you? And anybody else in a similar kind of role, either internally within an organization or somebody else consulting, they just get the reality to work with. There's no smoke and mirrors. There's no kind of, oh, is she or isn't he? You know, there's none of that questioning. It's just, right, here's the honest truth. Here's where we are. Here's where we need to get to. Now let's keep it trading at this honest level. I love this. This is how to grow properly, isn't it? There's nothing hidden. It's just how life should be, really.
Yeah. I mean, if it resonates, call me. If it doesn't, move to the next thing. There's, you know, I have no quandaries. And if you take something out and the out is like not her, then our interview did the job. And if somebody says, you know what, there's something I need to go back and think about, then we've done our job. That's our job. Our job is to get people to a yes or a no.
It is literally as simple as that, isn't it? Yeah. I want to get people to your quiz. How do they find your quiz?
You just go to whatsyourtalentworth.com and fill it out. And then You know, we literally just launched it. So if there's a bug or if there's anything or any feedback, I'd certainly love to hear it, especially from a discerning audience like your podcast listeners. And while we're at it, will you all do us a favor listening to the podcast? Will you go wherever you pick up the podcast and give Neil a 5-star review right after you subscribe to the podcast and share this episode with one other person?
Oh, Beata, you have taken the words out of my mouth. I don't do that enough. I'm not honest enough with the quality of my guests here. You've done it for me. Thank you so much for doing that. And thank you so much for just an inspirational series of answers to the questions I've posed. Honestly, I wasn't expecting it to kind of go like this, which is always a really great sign when the conversation just goes in slightly different directions. There's little nuanced moments in there that make people think, oh, I wouldn't have thought of it like that. This is a real growth architect at work, people. You need to pay attention. So I'm going to put a load of different links to how to find you in various other places in the notes for this episode. And Beata, thank you so much, you know, for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.